Welcome to the number one source for information, news, and opinion on your Columbus Blue Jackets. This is CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Find us on the CBJ Radio SoundCloud page, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play Music, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Now here's your host, Bob McGilligan.
Well, the Blue Jackets last night got back at it in a big way as they beat the Boston Bruins in the only exhibition game that they will play before starting the NHL postseason. They won that game by the score of 4-1. Three of the four goals came in the first period of the game. Boone Jenner got the first one, followed by Zach Werenski, Gus Nyquist, and then finally the empty netter was put in by Alexander Texier. I thought the Blue Jackets last night were in control of that game, not just on the scoreboard. I thought that they were in control as to what was going on. I thought they were playing the kind of game that they wanted to play. I know Boston didn't have to win that game. I know that they have the round-robin tournament that they're going to play to determine seeding. They're not going to be in a best-of-five series like the Blue Jackets are. I realize the Bruins have more time to get ready than the Blue Jackets do. But with all of that being said, I got to tell you, I was impressed with the way the Blue Jackets played last night. I was impressed with Liam Foudy, who set up Boone Jenner for the first goal of the game with a terrific pass as Boone was just busting to the net down the left wing side. I was impressed with Zach Werenski hammering the puck from the middle of the ice and putting it into the net to make it a 2-0 lead. And the defense that they played, the goaltenders, both of the goaltenders, Jonas Korpisalo gave up no goals. Elvis Merzlikins gave up one goal, but he gave it up to one of the premier forwards in the NHL, in David Pastrnak. I mean, to me, there were a lot of good things that came out of that game last night for the Columbus Blue Jackets. A lot of good things, and there's got to be a lot of good things to come. Speaking of good things, let me tell you about the good folks over at Telhio Credit Union that bring you this show. You know, at Telhio Credit Union, they put people ahead of profit. And they've done that for a long, long time. They've done it since 1934. Do you want to add up how many years that is? Do you? If you do, I'll wait, because it's a lot. And you're going to do a lot of counting and a lot of adding. But that's how long they've done it. That's how long they have made their customers, or you. Maybe it is you. Maybe it could be you. They've made you a priority. That's just what they do. That's what they are used to doing. So there's no reason for you to settle for a normal bank when you've got Telhio Credit Union, a credit union that puts you first. Want to find out more? Go to their website at telhio.org, and you can find out all about it. It's all right there at your fingertips. So do that and find out how you can be put ahead of everything else. Blue Jackets. Big win last night, as I said, over the Boston Bruins. Again, it doesn't count for anything in the way of points or advancing or whatever. That's fine. That's fine. I think from a momentum standpoint, from a just a feel-good standpoint, they needed that last night. They needed it. They got four goals. They got four goals. They gave up one. And they were impressive goals, quite honestly. They were impressive goals. But let's go to our points leader from last night, which is being brought to you by Franklin University. Franklin makes it possible. Gus Nyquist was the points leader for the Blue Jackets last night. He had two. He had a goal in the first period, and then he had a nice play to set up Alexander Texier for the final goal of the game, the empty netter. And it was a good play. I mean, he got the puck. He had a spin away from pressure, protect the puck. Then he got it to Tex with a nice little pass. And let Tex just take care of things and finish it off. So Gus Nyquist, in that game, he was a points leader last night as he wound up with two on the evening. Right now it's time for our interview. It's being brought to you by the Columbus Dispatch. And, you know, I watch the game a certain way. Other people watch the game different ways. And everybody has their opinions. And I wanted to go to somebody today that, first of all, In all honesty, full disclosure, as they say, last week he had me on his podcast, and this week I thought it would be great to reciprocate because he could come in and talk about this game that the Blue Jackets played against the Boston Bruins last night and break it down from a similar but yet still a different little style. And I'm talking about Aaron Portsline from The Athletic. Well, Aaron, you watched that game last night. Nice win for the Blue Jackets in their only tune-up before they take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. But what jumped out at you over that game? Anything specific? Anybody specific?
Well, I think what they were looking for team concept-wise was how well they play away from the puck, how well they defend, how well they check. That, of course, is going to be the focal point against the Leafs. What jumped out, and I thought that was all there, but what jumped out to me on an individual basis was how good Pierre-Luc Dubois looked. I thought he looked like a number one center last night. And you know what? He better, because you would think on a nightly basis, he's going to see either Tavares or Matthews with great regularity. Last night they had him against Bergeron, and I thought he did just a fantastic job. I thought he was dangerous offensively. He looked faster than I recall seeing him, certainly at the end of the season when the pause arrived. He used his frame. I thought there was some playmaking there, the great pass to Nyquist for the power play goal. But he had a couple of great looks himself. He was credited with only one shot on goal, which it felt like he was busier than that, but he picked the puck off of Torrey Krug's stick, gave himself a breakaway, had the great anticipation play on Brad Marchand to sort of kick the puck away from him and in close range put one off the crossbar. I thought he had a night where it could have easily been a 3 or 4 point night, but he looked like a game-changing type player, which if I'm the Blue Jackets, that's really good news for me.
And he played with that edge last night a little bit anyway. Cool. When he cross-checked Brad Marchand.
Yes.
That was well worth it. I mean, and that's the way – and I think you and I have talked about this before probably many times off camera or off mic. He's got to play ticked off because he's a better player when he plays that way, isn't he?
Yeah. He uses his body as a powerful – force. The fine line with him for me is he has to play angry, but he can't play angry with himself, because that's where he starts to eat himself alive, and then bad gets worse. And sometimes you go through long stretches, and honestly I think it's happened in all of his three seasons, where late in the season his offensive game has dipped late in the season. But tonight he looked like a two-way force to me, and that's a really good sign for them if that continues.
You had a story about Cam Atkinson here recently and, you know, needing to take it to another level. Again, this is an exhibition game against the Boston Bruins. It's not an elimination game in a series. But what did you think of his game against Boston?
There was one shift in particular where I thought he looked really quick and dangerous. For him, and kind of like for Bjorkstrand and Jones tonight, you're just looking to see the stress that they can put on the ankles and how they respond. Seth was great after the game, saying he doesn't say this very often, but it felt great to get hit. He was looking forward to that, just to get that feeling again. I mean, Atkinson hasn't played. I don't think he's played since late January or early February, well before the break happened. He was going to play in the game against Pittsburgh. That was the first game canceled for the Blue Jackets. I liked what I saw. It wasn't full Cam Atkinson, but for a guy coming back from essentially six, almost 7 months off, I thought there was a lot there to like.
Liam Foudy set up Boone Jenner for the first goal of the game. That was really moments after Liam Foudy looked like he was going to have a great opportunity himself from the slot and didn't get the puck settled down, missed on that opportunity, but he came right back and he made that play to Boone. You know, 19 years old, played two games in the NHL this year, whereas many would never have played a game in the NHL this year. But he did. And this comes after a training camp where maybe he could have made some noise, but he got hurt and then he was out. Right. Now, all of a sudden, it looks like, to me, after watching his performance in that game against Boston, I think he's a shoe-in for game one against the Maple Leafs at least. Do you agree?
I do. And in fact, can confirm that. Bob, just Tortorella has said as much. He's in. He's playing. And I think it's deserved as well. When there's so much talk about his speed, obviously there has to be more, and Robinson's kind of in the same boat, there has to be more there than just wheels. And the way Foodie plays, he may be one of those guys. He's really intelligent. He may be a better NHL player than he is an AHL type player because the play is more predictable, as guys always say. He doesn't look bashful or nervous or hesitant. Like, he's not just skating. He's skating with a purpose. He's playing the pass. That was a pass to Boone Jenner on the first goal. Goes in, I think it went off of Boone's skate, maybe a stick. But that's a sublime setup for anybody going hard to the net right there. And I've got a story percolating here in the next couple of days. Not sure when it's going to publish, but his background's really interesting. And he's appreciative of all of this. Of course he is. But he doesn't have the same sort of awe and wonder that maybe some other guys in the room do. This kid was raised in a family where you just are a professional athlete. This is what you do. And his mom, spoke with her the other night. She's like, yeah, he's 19 in the playoffs. Big deal. I was 17 in the Olympics. Like, she ran in the Olympics in Los Angeles when she was 17 years old. She's in lane 8. Over there is Evelyn Ashford, one of the great runners ever. No big deal. His dad was a great football player, won a great cup in the CFL. He was raised in a family where you have a backyard party, and there's Ben Johnson, right? It's just around you. He still owns, I don't know if people know this, Liam Foodie still owns the Ontario provincial record in the 300-meter hurdles. Like, he's a track star and a hockey player. He might be an Olympic-type runner had he not decided to go to hockey. So he was raised in a family that's always been on stage athletically. He's always been on stage athletically. And so while he appreciates this and it's great, he's excited, the whole family is, it doesn't feel like anything that's entirely unexpected either, because he always expected to be here.
And again, understand that, look, in the United States, you get interested in the Olympics, whether it's the Winter Olympics or Summer Olympics. But in Canada, the Olympics, I mean, that track and field stuff that's serious business all around, and not just in the Olympics there. I mean, they're really into that stuff. So, you know, when his mom says, hey, so what, at 17, I was in the Olympics, that is it's a really huge deal to begin with, just overall. But sure. Man, in a country like Canada, it is really big.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, having traveled there a bunch as you have, you learn the U.S., and I haven't been all over the world enough to know if we're just different than anybody else. We may be. We tend to put the Olympic sports down every 4 years when the Olympics aren't going on. You know what I'm saying? So people love Olympic gymnastics and figure skating and all this, but the interest in those really wane. When you're in Canada, if there's some team with that flag on playing anything, it doesn't matter what it is, squash, curling, you name it, the country's into it. That is absolutely a difference. They pay attention to the world championships, all of that stuff, if it is a Canadian entry in an international competition. There's no question. They also don't have all of the major sports that we do to divide attentions. They have a CFL, they have the NHL, of course, but they don't have their own basketball association, their own Major League Baseball. So it's a little bit different. But yeah, his mom is a bigger name in Canada, certainly, than Liam Foodie is.
Yeah, but he's trying to work on that right now.
Yes,
he's well on his way. And he might have a chance.
He might have a chance. He's well on his way. I think the kid can play. I think these coaches want him to be a player. I think they feel, I guess it's a different team. You look at their forwards, they're trying to find a magical setup up front where they have some sort of way that can concern Toronto as well. Like, you can't go into the series just worried only about checking Toronto and just purely being in a defensive mindset. You also have to create some sort of concern for the other team. The last 2 years, that was Panarin. Last year, it was Duchesne as well. Certainly, these guys are not accomplished hockey players at the Panarin level, but their speed does give teams concern, or should. Maybe it doesn't at the start, but it will soon enough.
What about the goaltending? Because that is the big question, you know, who's going to start the series against Toronto, and actually who starts it, might not finish it. Who knows? Right. They came out of camp where, you know, Corpusalo gave up a lot of goals early. You get down to the final day of the camp in Columbus, and it was Merzlikins that gave up a lot of goals. They each played half a game. Corpy was perfect in hit from the stop, the shot stopping totals. He was 11 for 11. Elvis comes in. You know, Seth tries to make a nice play in front of him and actually deflects a puck basically right onto the stick of David Pastrnak, who's the last guy you want to see standing 3 feet out in front of you. So he got that goal. But other than that, Elvis was really good. So does that make the decision easier or tougher on John Tortorella, what he saw in that game against Boston?
Well, if you're the coaching staff, I think you're long-term delighted that both of them made the statement that they did tonight. As short-term, you're driven mad by it, unless they already have a guy in mind. And that guy didn't do anything to dispel that notion. I thought they were both really, really good tonight. I think they really want to be careful with Corpusalo's, with the respect they show Corpusalo because of who he is, this organization, what he's given this organization, how much of a team player he has been. And I think that's a really bitter pill for either of these guys. If they don't start, doesn't mean they're not going to play. As you noted, my gut tells me that Corpusalo started tonight and they made Corpusalo available to the media after the game tonight. I just have a feeling that that is an indication that Elvis goes on Sunday. And maybe they wanted Elvis, or thought Elvis came into camp with a half a step ahead of Corpusalo and did nothing to get them away from that. I don't know. I have no inside knowledge on this whatsoever. If I had to wager, I would say Corpusalo. But Tortorella made it clear after the game that their decision is not made and won't be made until Saturday.
And even if it was, you wouldn't tell any of us anyway.
Probably not. You'd have to use some trickery or some subterfuge to get him to talk. You know, it can be done.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, Jody Shelley was on post game with me, and he said that, you know, in his gut, he felt like Elvis was going to get the start in the first game. And that surprised me a little bit because I guess personally, I feel that Torts respects those things that you talked about with Corpusalo and the team guy that he has been for the last couple of years, and you know what he's just the way he's handled himself and all of that. That they would go that route, and if they are thinking that, you're right, he didn't hurt his cause by any means, and what he did against Boston. But then there is that flip side where Gabriel Carlson played against the Pittsburgh Penguins a couple of years ago, and he had like zero experience.
Yes.
And he was in there. And last year, you know, Texier comes in at the end of the season and they put him in there. John Tortorella does love to have you expect the unexpected, doesn't he?
Loves it. He loves to put those guys in where there's really no book on them around the league. And I think he likes to do it as much for that player, for the newness they bring to the lineup, as he does for the uncomfortableness it creates among veteran players. But honestly, I think in this situation, if John Tortorella thought all things were equal, I think he would go with Corpusalo because he has so much respect for him and he wants to reward that Corpusalo has given them. And this is a tough thing to say, but the sense I get from talking to people around the league, and the Blue Jackets are really quiet about this, but the sense around the league is that Corpusalo is going to be a number one goaltender for sure. But that Elvis, it may be a little some time before he's consistent with who he is as a goalie, but that his top shelf, his ability to steal games, that the best that Elvis can be is maybe a little bit better than the best that Corpusalo can be. And again, I don't think who starts one is for sure going to finish the series. But if they feel like they need a goaltender that can steal some games, I think you saw in that 8-game stretch with Merzlikins last year, he had 5 shutouts in 8 games. The play in front of him was really, really good then too. But there were times in each game where he had to make just ridiculous saves. Again, not that Corpusalo hasn't. I certainly don't want this to sound as a criticism of Corpusalo. I just feel like Merzlikins to many around this league feels like the future to Columbus.
which will be very interesting because, as you and I have heard for the last couple of years, this Daniil Tarasov is supposed to be an up-and-comer too. So, you know, we're talking about those two guys that are competing now, and then there's that guy, and then, you know, Kev Lennox played this year. He's actually on the roster. He's in Toronto right now. I mean, that's a situation where, and, you know, you think about this as you look around the league, like you just see the, you know, the Islanders just bring in a goalie, a young goalie, and they're looking for some stability there. And, you know, it's almost hard to believe. It's almost a pinch yourself thing where just a year after Sergei Bobrovsky leaves, that this franchise is maybe more set in that position than they were when he was here.
Right. And credit to Jarmo Kekalainen for building up that position. I've been saying this for years. It's a little crazy. I think you should take a goaltender in every draft. One goaltender in every draft, because that position is so unpredictable from the young guys to this point. You talk to people, even in this organization, about Daniil Tarasov, and management will say that he's absolutely off limits. Like, don't even ask about him in trades. Now, everyone's available. Let's not kid ourselves. But that's not a throw-in. That kid is not going to be a throw-in. That's a big piece to them. The other thing that's frequently heard is that he has more upside than either of the guys that are here right now, Korpisalo or Merzlikins, that he has that much ability. I think, you know, not to get way ahead of ourselves, but here I go, the qualifying round is upon us. But if you look at that goaltending position and you look at the Blue Jackets' glut of defensemen, it's easy to see where a trade is, where a trade could be in this coming offseason. And I think it happens. And I'm not sure which goalie it is. I'm not sure which defenseman it is. I'm not sure if it's Josh Anderson, if they get a deal settled. But I think if last offseason was the offseason of free agent losses, as tough as that was, I think this offseason is the offseason of trades, because they have some really interesting pieces. That's especially true with the salary cap being stagnant and knowing that it's going to be that for the next couple of years, most likely. Teams who need goaltending, see if Toronto on the other side of this playoff series feels that Freddie Anderson's no longer the guy. Do the Red Wings need the goaltending? You look around the league, teams are going to need goaltending. If they need it, that's a desperate need. They may not have a lot of cap room, and so affordable goaltending with number one potential, it becomes really, really valuable.
That's a really interesting point and a great observation, no doubt. And when you talk about maybe the offseason of trades, here's the other thing that's even more interesting. If you aren't able to pull off beating the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's not a good thing. However, it could result in a good thing, because somebody that loses in the qualifying round is going to be the recipient of the first overall pick. And boy, that would be a real way to jumpstart your offense, wouldn't it?
I mean, you're speaking, of course, of Alexis Lafreniere. You know, you're right. This is a tough topic here, because I think this Blue Jackets team is really, really, really good and really deep. However, you have that concern that unless they can add difference-making players, like big-time difference-making players, Matthews, Tavares, these guys, if they can't add those guys, are they the team that is just perpetually good enough to fight for a playoff spot, but not good enough to get the Holy Grail, the cup? You know, I love their young guys, Texier, Foodie, Robinson. They're high on Kirill Marchenko. They have a couple Russian prospects that look really, really bright. So all of this is what Jarmo Kekalainen used as justification for the trade deadline moves he made. And, you know, we can say about the goaltending right now, he was right. We can say about the prospects coming up, it looks like their prospects are better than maybe people around the league have given them credit for. I still don't know if there's a number one perennial all-star, NHL award-winning type forward in that group. And Lafreniere is that guy. He's one of those players that lifts his presence. We saw it with Panarin. I'm not comparing the two players, they're different kind of players. But his kind of his level of skill and talent is the type that lifts all boats. That makes everything around him better. If the Blue Jackets lose, as you mentioned, that is the silver lining. And if you could promise, I've thought a lot about this. I'd be curious to get your thoughts. These teams in the qualifying rounds, how many teams, if you could promise them Lafreniere, would be A-OK with losing in the first round? I think that number is a lot bigger than most people would realize.
Yeah, I think it's most, quite honestly, because of what you just said. Let's look at these teams. I mean, Montreal's in the qualifying round. You think they wouldn't like to have a French-Canadian kid that grew up right down the road?
Yep.
Pittsburgh. Look, you can say what you want to about them. Crosby and Malkin are getting older. They're going to soon be in the market for another young talent. Where else do you want to go on this? Minnesota Wild, Chicago Blackhawks. You go down the list. I think there are a lot. I think it's most, and it could be all, that would say, you know what, okay, I'll make that deal. I'll bow out of this round if you're promising me I'm getting that guy.
Yeah, and their chances of winning the Blue Jackets is 12 point – if they lose the first round, whoever loses the first round, the chances of winning is 12.5%. I went back, I got this scrap of paper here somewhere, year by year with all of their lottery odds, because you know the lottery's not been kind to them. This would be the fourth – if they lose in the first round of Toronto, it would be their fourth best chance to win the lottery ever, which if you think of some of those years where it's over by Thanksgiving – that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And again, you know, it would be much more fun if they can knock off Toronto, which they have the ability to do, and go on a run. But the whole point here is that there is a silver lining. And again, there are a bunch of other teams that are thinking the same thing, that if you can't get it done, oh, well, at least you're going to have this this chance at the lottery pick. So should be really interesting, though. I'm really looking forward to the series against Toronto getting underway, because – I want to see if they can do it again. I want to see if they can pack it in against the firepower. I want to see if they can get the good goaltending like they did last year against Tampa. And I want to see if this is a group that finds themselves some timely goals.
Yep. And I'm with you. I think it's a fascinating matchup. One thing that interests me is I think Columbus and people are tired of this narrative, I'm sure. But what they lost last offseason has taken their margin for error and made it yet smaller. So I think they have to – I think they're the team in this series that can play really, really well and not necessarily win. You know what I'm saying? Because they have to work so hard to score goals. I think Toronto is the team that can win a game when they're really not all that happy with the way they played, because they've got the skill that can cover up a lot of mistakes. But I'll be damned if I'm going to pick against this team when we saw what they did last year against Tampa. But you know, you take away Panarin, Duchesne, who are both really good in that series. You take away Josh Anderson. Maybe he makes a surprise appearance in this series. I don't get the sense he's going to be ready in game one. That's a huge that man, Josh Anderson, played an enormous role in that Tampa Bay series. So – you know, that's a lot of giving back of the difference makers in that first round series against Tampa. I think they can do it. I think they have a mental edge on Toronto, where Toronto is so caught up in its playoff struggles through the years. If they lose game one, those walls start closing in on them already. It helps them that the media is not there with them. It helps them that they're in a bubble and protected, although there may be people with pitchforks at the gates. But I do think they can get Toronto thinking pretty quick if they get off to a jump.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And the final thing I want to ask you is coaching matchup, because it's not Mike Babcock anymore. And I thought that Mike Babcock did a pretty good job in the battle of the old guard against John Tortorella and getting the matchups that he wanted to, when he wanted to get those and all of that. But he's a non-factor now.
Yeah, he is. And this is John Tortorella going up against a player that he coached in his early 20s, back in the early 2000s, Sheldon Keefe with the Lightning. Sheldon Keefe has 47 games in the NHL. I think John Tortorella is like at 1420 or something crazy, way up there. The all-time winningest U.S. coach, five-time Jack Adams Trophy. So you'd have to believe, and you would hope if you're the Blue Jackets, that that is a decided advantage. This is the first time Keefe will be in this position. But the Leafs played a different brand of hockey when Sheldon Keefe came on board. The players wanted to play for him, and they were, I think, in the last – since Keefe came on board, I think they were the highest scoring team in the league. He was tough on them in certain areas, how they have to defend. Everybody wants more out of this team defensively, the Leafs. I'm not sure if they have it in them. I'm not sure if the Blue Jackets can make it pay for that. But that is John Tortorella's job. And as we saw last spring, there aren't too many coaches that are better at getting it out of teams than he is. And you can only hope that the speech, the pregame game one speech this year is as good as it was last year, because that was magnificent.
That was magnificent. There's no doubt. And it's probably going to be similar, because I think the game plan, I think he just reached into a file and he went, oh, here's that game plan against Tampa. Dust that off and lay it right back down there.
Yeah. I just hope he doesn't call like Nylander Kucherov by accident. Yeah. I hope he swaps the name out. But that pregame speech, like, oh my, I mean, I remember seeing it early in game. You're thinking, oh God, they're down 3-0. It didn't work that well. But just listening to that and to see the look on the players' faces, I mean, you're thinking, oh my God, I'd run through a wall for that guy right now, and I don't even play for him. It was incredible.
Yeah, and if he can get you and I to run through a wall, he's done something.
Was it Texier that's there facing him too in the camera? And he's like three games into his NHL career going, oh my God, what if I got this?
They didn't say this in France or anywhere else in Europe.
What have I gotten myself into, Mom? Right.
Yeah. Aaron, thank you so much. Always appreciate it. It's great insight. It's going to be fun watching this, as you said. So I know we're not in the same building and we're not having those same types of conversations, but we're still having them, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me, man.
That is Aaron Portsline from The Athletic with his views on not only last night's game between the Blue Jackets and the Boston Bruins, but some views on the Blue Jackets' future. The past, the future, I think we covered a lot of stuff right there. So it was great and very enjoyable. Blue Jackets are getting set to take on the Toronto Maple Leafs game one of their play-in series that is coming up on Sunday. And right now, let's take a look at that game preview. It's being brought to you by Moo Moo Express Car Wash. Do you moo? The CBJ do. Blue Jackets had a split series with the Toronto Maple Leafs during the regular season. They lost on opening night at Nationwide Arena. Toronto came in here and handled them. And then later, the Blue Jackets went into Toronto, and Gus Nyquist wound up getting a penalty shot in overtime, and Blue Jackets got the win that way. So they split the season series. Two young teams. Toronto very fast, extremely fast. They've got a lot of scoring on the forward lines. Their defense is where they seem to be vulnerable. Defense and goaltending. Frederik Andersen, their goaltender, was good early last year, and then he got not so good as the season went along. That'll be the key for the Blue Jackets against the Toronto Maple Leafs. First of all, can you shut down their forwards? Second of all, can you take advantage of their defense, and can you beat their goaltending? And if you can do all three of those things, you've got a great chance to win this series. Again, it is a play-in series because they took 12 teams in each conference. They didn't take eight. So you've got to play in to get to the round of 16 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, I should say. And that's what the Blue Jackets will be looking to do. They've got to win three. You've got to win three out of five to get there. And game one of that series is going to be on Sunday night. It'll face off at 8 o'clock. And I will have the call for you, beginning with pregame coverage on the Blue Jackets radio network, starting at 7 o'clock on Sunday evening. Hour-long pregame, puck drops at 8, Blue Jackets and the Leafs go head-to-head for what could be five games. Who knows? I mean, the way the Blue Jackets played against the Bruins, the way that the Maple Leafs played against the Canadiens the other night, are those indicators? I don't know. We'll find out. They both look pretty good. I think it's going to be a really interesting series, and I am looking forward to bringing you the call. Again, Sunday night, 8 o'clock, pregame coverage starts at 7 o'clock. Blue Jackets Radio Network, also at BlueJackets.com on the Blue Jackets app. You can find it on the TuneIn app. You can find us on Sirius XM Radio. You can find us almost anywhere. And if you go to BlueJackets.com, that is the main source to you can find it there, and you can find out where else you can find it too. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope you're ready, because the exhibition game is now out of the way. It is time for the real thing. It's the real stuff, and it starts on Sunday, and it'll seem like it's here before you know it. That'll do it for today's edition of CBJ and 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until Sunday night, when the Blue Jackets take on the Maple Leafs in Game 1, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long.